Okay, right, I'm here with Adam Falb. Are we saying Falb today?
As opposed to?
Adam Falb.
No, we'll go with Falb. Okay. We haven't sorted out the logistics of my alter ego publisher yet.
So about 20 minutes ago, we were texting saying what we're going to do for stretch goals. That was literally where we take, was it? And I said, oh, well, you're nearby, because pop in the office and we can record a commentary about it. And you've popped over. You've still got your hat on.
Yeah, we're like the St Albans Mafia. You know, we just sort of hang about very locally, and then you just tell me to pop in.
I'm mostly in the park.
Yeah. That's where we are. We're recording. It's very quiet in here, actually, in this park.
Nowhere near the playground, obviously. No. Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit about Atomic Hercules 1. So we're only going to talk about 1, aren't we? Because 2's written and you started it. Is that right?
Yeah. Let's keep 2 to ourselves. That's stretch goals for the next Kickstarter.
All I will say is 2 gets fucking worse.
Have you
read through the whole script yet?
I am. I'm worried about you. I'm worried about you. This is like all your inner things just sort of come into the, and then you sort of typing them out. I'm just concerned.
One's pretty bad, to be fair. So let's go back then. Okay, so you were just reminding me, because we're trying to remember where it all started. And I've got a feeling you created, was it like a Twitter group? And sent out a few ideas to people. Is that right?
Yeah, that was sort of come a bit after as well. The first thing was a tweet, because I found a copy of... Basically, I thought I knew everything Marvel put out in the 70s.
Right.
I think when Tom DeFalco was editing...
Okay, so the sort of Bronze Age...
And I think he says in that Sam Howell book, Marvel the Untold Story, he says that he didn't have time to edit anymore, because he was just so busy.
So he
was letting the writers put out...
What they liked. Which kind of worked, actually.
Well, the consequence of that was a lot of weird shit.
Yeah.
Just, like, flying around. And I thought I knew all of that.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember what book it was, but I found it in a comic mark.
Wasn't The Human Fly?
I think it might have been The Human Fly.
Yeah, we like The Human Fly, don't we?
I love The Human Fly. It just, like, must have just slipped past my radar completely. But I love this idea of, like, these comics that could completely pass you by from that era. And all this sort of, you know, the stuff, something like catches on, like Spider-Woman was out, created and released at that time.
Yeah, there was some really, really strange stuff. And if you look at Killraven and Panther's Rage and stuff like that, they just like let them go, didn't they?
And it's stuff that's still like very much, like even though they're not maybe like, Machine Man's a classic example, like there hasn't been a Machine Man ongoing since, there was the miniseries in the 90s from Barry Windsor-Smith.
Yeah.
But ongoing, it hasn't been done since the Jack Kirby one.
Yeah, and if you look at Jack Kirby, it span out of the 2001 series,
yes,
which is possibly the most nuts series from back then. Yeah.
But it's all of that stuff is still very much in the zeitgeist of people. Like,
yeah. I think Machine Man's a villain in Iron Man 2020. I only read it the other day.
Yeah, he does pop up. He pops up from time to time. Yeah. Like, people don't forget him, and he's still like a much loved character. But he hasn't slipped sort of past everyone's sort of net. But I think someone like The Human Fly is just can easily sort of go past, and it ran, I think it was 19 issues in the end.
Yeah.
And it was just, so I was consumed by the idea that going through a long box you could find all these things.
The other one that always strikes me is the Atlas Comics ones. So you had Iron Jaw and Hands of the Dragon and Morlock 3001 was it, and just like fucking nuts stuff.
Mm. What was the one that Kirby did the cover for?
It's
the guy in the hood, the red hood.
Oh, I can't remember. I'm not sure.
Editing.
Yeah, by the way. We won't edit it. Yeah, but it's fine.
Absolutely not. But anyway, so I think I tweeted something. It was like, wouldn't it be great to do like to be able to do like an independent series? And I guess maybe I was inspired a bit by like Josh Bayer's All Time Comics.
I like Josh Bayer. Yeah, he's good.
Like a series of weird Marvel.
Or Michael Fife's books as well, a bit like that. Yeah, Cobra's a bit like that, isn't it? Yeah.
So I sort of put that out, and then I think it's probably at the time it was like my most popular tweet ever. People were loving it.
Okay.
People were saying, "Yeah, go and do it," and all this sort of. And a few people sort of said, "Do it," and my reaction to them was, "You better write it then." So then they said, "Yeah, all right." So they went away, and then I said to you, this is what I might be doing, so can you write something?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you said, yeah, I've got a few things in the old notebook that can come to fruition. I like to think that's completely changed over the last 6 months?
My idea has completely changed, yeah. And what I initially was thinking about doing for you was not this.
I remember you saying, I think, I'm pretty sure it was along the lines of like a mixture between like Thor Ragnarok, but it was Hercules instead of Thor.
Okay, that sort of rings a bell.
I remember you saying, but then you went, oh, it's too much like Ragnarok, because I think he ends up in it. He ended up in like an Olympic sort of stadium.
That's right. Yeah, because I wanted to do the pit fighting thing and it was too similar. Okay. And that's right.
So I think you said no. So I just let you get on with that while I was sorting
it out. It was Hercules as Killraven. That's what I was doing. Yeah. So I thought, because I obviously love Killraven and love the Hercules Unbound stuff. I thought, well, we'd maybe combine them in a sort of freaky, and we'll get into a minute out which way we went with it. But yeah, I thought, oh no. And then I came up with this, but I just think
over the last 6 months you've become so salty and just hate the world that it's slowly sort of seeped into your writing.
Yeah, you could be right there.
This was a lovely Hercules tale.
Yeah. It was romantic. Hercules. Yeah, we're going to put it out on Valentine's Day. Yeah, this is not true. None of this is true.
So I think there was a group. I was banding it. And by the way, so this concept has kind of faded out over a little. I think
there's still a few on the go, and we've got a few on the bubble.
A little bit. There's another sort of one that's sort of hopefully coming out after the Atomic Hercules is done. But I think such is the nature of the small press world that things take so long to do that you end up, by the time you get around to another project, it could be another year.
Yeah. That's okay.
It's just the nature of the...
We're not rushed, are we, sometimes?
No, it's just the nature of the game, I think, because we don't do it full-time. Most people don't. It's only like a hobby.
Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? Because I was thinking about this the other day, about the English small press scene being quite an individual... It's become its own character now and something unlike anything else. And the reason it struck me is because when we look... Because thankfully, very kind of them, 11 O'Clock Comics put a little shout out for us last week as we were recording. And Jason and Vince... and Dap were talking about, is it going to be in Diamond? And that's like an anathema to us. It's like something we would never consider, isn't it?
I took that as a massive sort of compliment.
Yeah, me too.
They obviously looked at it and I think probably Jason had brought it up. And the idea that he thought that had a publisher behind it was just very much like...
And it's me and you in the park.
Writing things about heads coming off. sort of very sort of hypersexual sort of... I was sort of very flattered that he thought.
Yeah, that was good. But I think the UK scene is that individual thing now, isn't it? It's the breeding ground for experimentation, invention in a way, because stuff like this is coming out of it. To me, your idea sort of sparked, because we've hung out enough at Comic Marts for you to know that we both love the Bronze Age stuff. But I think the aesthetic of the Bronze Age is. In what you're doing here is, and what we're doing, is joined with the Outlaw Comics thing that you hear Jim Rugg and Ed Piskor and Tom Cioli talk about a bit, I think. Is that right? Or?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, there's just like a laissez-faire sort of just like view on it. You know? Yeah. There's no one stopping people doing these things. And then that comes back to like what you were saying, like with the UK small press becoming its own thing.
Yeah.
Like the idea of having it in Diamond or published... normally doesn't even occur to me because, first of all, we don't need it to be.
Yeah.
And secondly, who would publish
it? Yeah, we'd need to sell a few. I think you've got to sell a few to get in there, haven't you?
And yeah, I mean, it's all very...
It's all changed a bit, I know, but...
Yeah, I think it's still all very, like, you got to pitch it to them.
Yeah.
And then they decide if it's good enough to go in there. And then, although you probably sell enough and they don't care what goes in there.
And I suppose when we're sort of linked up and networked enough in the small press, aren't we, we don't need that to sell as many as we need to make some kind of profit, especially with the Kickstarter sort of platform as well. We kind of make comics because we love them. I mean, neither of us is going to earn any money out of this, I might add. You know what I mean? That's a thing. Yeah.
I do think it can be done, though. I think it's heading that way.
If we keep
pushing, you see these Kickstarters make thousands. So
and we're over 1,000.
The tool is there. If we were to just harness it in the right way, I think you could. You could sort of easily just sort of eclipse any numbers that Diamond make, because...
On occasion, you see some of these numbers that people are making and we're selling more than them.
Because, you know, if you're a comic shop, I mean, what are you looking at? Are you flicking all the way back to, you know, the very like tiniest publisher in the back of the catalogue. Probably not. You look at your Diamond, your Marvel, your DC.
Yeah.
Yeah, even in, you know, probably go as far as like Aftershock or something like that.
But there's a lot of companies you just don't see stocked. I mean, a lot of companies, especially in the UK, we think, oh, do they actually put physical copies out? We had a conversation about this the other day. And they all do, but we just don't see them in shops, do we? That's the thing, because they don't get ordered.
Yeah, I think unless you go to like a Forbidden Planet who seem to order every book
that
is in the catalogue.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, you probably wouldn't know.
So that's where we've gone with it. That's where we are. We're kickstarting it. It's just kickstarting the first issue to start with, and then we're going to do the second issue, which is on its way. The first issue is done, so we'll talk a bit about the creation of that. But I think what happened was I sent you a... Did I send you a pitch and a breakdown, page breakdown? Is that right? That sat with you for a while?
I think so. I think the first thing you wrote me was just before... a very infamous Comic Con in Birmingham.
That's right.
Last August, you sent me about. It was probably the equivalent of a page of A4.
Yeah.
On it was over like Twitter DMs.
Yeah.
And it was just like here's what happens in the story, and it was just like a short.
It was like a Marvel style almost. It's more than Stan would have given to Jack back in the day almost.
Let's not get into the how much Stan gives to Jack, but. Yeah, so I read that. I just loved it. So then I think you sort of probably sent that you probably broke it down into like pages.
Yeah. Okay.
And then there was a little bit of sort of, I was trying to sort out the logistics of possibly trying to release a book monthly.
We were talking about Patreon and stuff like
that. Yeah, and all the ways you could do that.
Yeah.
And in between, I think, and then after a little while, I said, okay, right, send the script over. Tony, yours is going to be first up on the...
And I think I don't think I'd written it at that point. I think I'd only written the page breakdown.
Yeah.
But having had... I've never done that before. I've written a page breakdown as part of a pitch, but it made it really easy to write the book from that.
Okay. Yeah, interestingly that's all I've ever done.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Like, I write in like weird ways. So I can write in by like thumbnailing. I do a lot of writing that way. And then I just don't even know where it's going. Or I can write... Normally, I write like a paragraph. This is what happens in this book. And then sort of stretch it out and then maybe split it into pages.
Okay.
So I don't exactly... So what you done was quite natural for me.
And then I added the dialogue and stuff. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. So have you ever... I'm just trying to think. Have you ever worked with a writer before?
I'm going to say no. I reckon this is probably the first time.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because obviously I read all your stuff.
Yeah.
Fragment and Satan's Library, and I've read it all. And I wrote it because some of my favourite stuff you do is... the Fragment's got that big double page spread, isn't it? With the faces stuff, and one of my favourite pages of yours. So I think especially for those that read issue two will see that I've... there's one particular... Let's call it a flying scene, which I thought you'd make your own, and I purposely made that a double page spread because I really wanted to see that out for you.
That's something I like to think you've done. Like I like to think this whole thing you've sort of tailored to me. Like,
This is what
I probably appreciate about the whole thing the most. Like,
You know. Some of the scenes, because we know each other and we're friends, I know I couldn't send to. As much as I love Milmo, I would never send it to Milmo, for example. Or, you know, some creators are... trying to think who else I wouldn't send it to, but there's a whole host of people I wouldn't send it to.
Yeah,
Avery Hill, I don't think, would accept it, let's be honest. Yeah.
There's definitely, like, you know... Sometimes it's like page 16, go full prison pit on this one. That's like the dialogue we built over...
So it's the language we've got, isn't it?
Yeah, since we've known each other that we both enjoy...
Yeah. I read Prison Pit whilst writing this.
Yeah,
I have to say
you sent me images of it, and then I had to go all the way to New York to get a copy of Volume 1.
That's right.
Which I did in a used book short store.
It was the last one. I found some on Glem. It's translated.
In classic life fashion, I've seen many copies since then.
Oh, okay. It's a great book, and it's that sort of thing, and Forsman's books as well. Revenger and stuff like that, I kind of found a little bit of inspiration on.
Oh, did you? Yeah, I very much enjoyed his stuff. He's a very talented man. He can do a lot of stuff, doesn't he? He does like, you know, he can do the Revenger and then he can sort of bring it back and do like...
End of the Fucking World or something. Yeah.
Something a little bit more autobiography. And
the gym rug. There's a little bit of the gym rug in the aesthetic we've got going, I think. There's a little bit of the Ed Piskor, because there's a serious wink at the reader in this, isn't there? Which you get in Ed's work as well, you know.
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, this whole thing for me is very you. Like, this is like, I mean, maybe you. I'm sure if you know Tony and you read it, you'll see that Atomic Hercules is Tony. Like, there's no two ways about it. Like, I might as well.
I've never thought of that before. You may be right. I've never killed anyone in that special way we kill someone.
But I think you thought about it.
Yeah, I have.
Very
yeah.
much
yeah,
so.
Yeah. And it just seemed a natural move.
Yeah.
If you're in a bar fight and someone's getting a blowjob, that's where you go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks.
Read the book.
Yeah, don't,
if you haven't read
spoil
the book,
it.
If you're listening to this and you haven't read the book, then sort of,
I suppose we should cater this to people who have actually read it, shouldn't we?
I guess so. Pause it now.
Okay.
Well, this has been chatting. This has been sort of.
So this is the pre-chat. Yeah. Go and read it now.
Go and read it now.
And come back.
Tony, sorry.
Yeah, I apologise.
I'm just an accessory.
Have a shower.
In this,
You probably won't have had sex between reading it and coming back to us now, because you probably won't manage it.
Although you might be very horny.
Yes, that is true.
Depending on which way, you know, what you're into, it's possible.
And we're back now. Okay, you've read it. Good. Hopefully that worked out right. We made that up on the hoof, that little thing.
Yeah.
So you've read it now. So you will have recognised all the tropes that we've just discussed about, let's call it the cockeyed murder.
Yeah,
as I like to refer to it. So a man kills another man. Is he a mutant? He's kind of a mutant, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yeah. He's part of the
mutant army.
He
kills a man by sticking his knob through his head. Quite imaginative. We bite people's hands off.
I reckon if you were to pitch it to a publisher, like, that would have been like the leading.
Yeah.
That was the thing that you were. You gave to me before, but any of the rest of it, I think, you know, it was.
So have you seen that movie, The Player, where he goes, "Well, imagine it's raining, all the umbrellas are open," you know, in a big movie studio, and then it'd be me saying, "Imagine it's the desert, and you're in a baboon infested village, and McGregor, big shout out to Don, that's who he's named after, is behind the bar, and you're getting blown off and shouting Jane Foster at the point of no return," which I was quite proud of. Yeah, there's a couple of little names pop up in this, aren't there? I think Romanoff gets a little mention later on in issue two.
Yeah, that's an issue two sort of, get you excited about that one.
And then the Revolutionary Army come in and they try to take Hercules as a soldier, and a fight kicks off, and a man who is getting orally pleasured gets grabbed, and his knob gets pushed through the eye of... I'm in my office here, so I'm going to walk past the door.
Yeah,
that's right, they didn't come in. Gets murdered by in a cockeyed way, which is how we're referring to it. And later on, the two I wanted to mention, who you might see more of, is Noodles and Crystal.
More sort of crazy thoughts from your inane mind, really. Yeah.
Noodles is a creation of somebody I know, and also the phrase, long and thin may go in, short and thick does the trick. his partner, obviously, as you will have seen his penis already, as Adam very brilliantly drew it, is a sex cushion.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, you're
I think I might have made sex cushion up, but is it a thing? I don't know. Can you Google it on your phone?
I'm going to say,
don't look it up.
We're going to quick. This is like going to be a live reaction to sex cushions, which Tony's pretending he doesn't know. Okay. Oops. Sex.
But that only appears in a sort of flashback in a photograph he's got in his wallet. He shows to Hercules.
I mean, it's not custom sex pillows. Is quite high.
Oh, okay. It's quite high up in the search.
You can sort of see. this is ruining my eBay history.
He accidentally went to ordering it. Oh my god.
Yeah. See.
Oh
they
dear.
Are. And but it also allows for.
Oh my god.
For positioning such as that.
Okay. So there's no faces on them, right?
You don't get this on the awesome pod, do you? The live
Googling of sex pillow. Okay, good. So we did that. So we did have a chuckle. I certainly had a chuckle writing it, and you had to have an hourly shower drawing it. How long did it take you to draw it? Because I know you're fast, aren't you? So it's...
Yeah, I think you sent it on, I want to say, you sent it sort of towards the end of November.
Okay, yeah.
And I sort of had it done by the start of January.
Right.
So I'd say 6 weeks.
It's good, man. It's good.
Mm.
Yeah. And you got a job. You got a full-time job as well.
Dashed out rubbish, some might say.
Who said that?
I don't know. I wouldn't like to say. I mean,
people are jealous. That's all.
Possibly.
People are jealous. Yeah. So we did that. So that's got done. So one is completely done and ready to go out. And we're probably, what, a week into the Kickstarter now, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we are, exactly a week.
So we're going to send it out to a reviewer, weren't we? We're going to choose a reviewer to send it out to week two. Because you get that big bit in the middle, don't you, which is just, like, boring.
It's weird, yeah, and pledges. I think it's something that people are becoming sort of quite privy to, because I've...
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who are only running 14-day one.
There are.
14 days. And it's something we might certainly do with the second one.
Yeah.
Just because you get that, the sort of blitz at the start, and a bit picks up at the end, and then nothing in the middle. So why are we all still doing the middle bit?
Yeah, I don't know. That's true, actually. Because it literally, after 3 days, it slowed down.
Mm.
Yeah. I was in Angoulême with Sam from Nobrow, and he kept saying, how many percent? How many percent? Because I was like, I'd started boring him, so he started asking me to stop me boring him.
Okay, yeah.
And then it passed it, and then we're like, oh, well, that seems to have just slowed down now.
Yeah, that'll be that then, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I reckon, yeah, you get to about sort of 85, 90, and it's like a slog over the line.
It was, wasn't it? We did really well in the first, 6 hours. We got 60%, something like that, I think.
And then it's just like any stragglers that haven't backed this.
And then I've got access to it, but being an idiot, I can't work out how to see who the people pledging are because I'm thick.
Okay, can you post updates? I thought I invited you.
I can post updates. Okay. Yeah. I just looked at it this morning. But I can't see who pledged it. So you sent me a list of who's pledged.
Yeah.
And so I know now who I will hate that haven't pledged for it at comic conventions.
Okay, so I haven't looked because I hate to think about that.
Right,
so
okay.
So something I actively don't look at until... I'm like writing the names on the envelopes.
Right.
When they're going
so you say, oh, he hasn't, why hasn't he pledged? Yeah. I thought he was my friend. You can't do that. No. But then again, we do kill a man with his knob. So it won't be everyone's cup of tea.
No, yeah. I mean, but it's about the digital one.
Yeah. Yeah, about it's only £2, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy, isn't it? And you're getting extras now. You're getting this brilliant recording.
Absolutely, yeah. Where are people listening to this? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
I like the idea of people that's on the train.
Yeah.
Listening to us.
Be interesting if we get any Atomic Hercules cosplayers.
Yeah. Anyone come to the top of your head? I reckon Dan would do a good Atomic Hercules.
He would, wouldn't he?
Pop a little grey wig on it.
Yeah. Nick Brokenshire? He's got the greying beard, isn't he?
Mm, possibly.
Right. Maybe we could get someone could do noodles. Carry around Crystal.
Possibly.
Under his arm.
That's like if you're what's that thing with Dr. Christian where they come in and just says it with embarrassing bodies. So if you've been on Embarrassing Bodies and have a really long knob.
I'm going to do my joke now. So rather than wank like that, he does this. That's why it's gone like that. But you know, like you're rubbing sticks together to make a fire.
Yeah.
He's done that
with Play-Doh.
That's what's happened.
Yeah.
Poor old Noodles. He's not right, is he? And he dies quite quickly.
Yeah, it's a
shame.
Then
I really like the last page you did, because I said to him, make a big fucking robot and make it look really threatening. And you did really well with that. That was really good.
Mm.
Yeah, spot on.
That was the only thing that I was drawing A2, I think.
I had to go really up. Okay.
And I've already ordered some A2 paper, because you've drawn like five or six A2 scenes.
I have.
Into the next one,
purposely, And we've got a little tribute coming in issue 2 as well, haven't we, to a previously drawn and much homaged cover.
Oh yes,
looks good.
I've penciled that. Yeah,
and then the other thing we should talk about, probably really, and people are bored now. It's 23 minutes, but people are probably not bored of us.
Definitely not.
Nah, fuck that. Is we should probably talk about Ken Landgraf.
Oh yeah, my boy Ken, who I like to profess that we're great friends now.
Yeah, proper mates. Now Ken's, I called him in a piece the other day. A veteran. He's a veteran, isn't he?
I like to think so.
He's done The Witching Hour. He's done Ghosts, he's done Superman Family, did Nightwing and Flamebird.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know him so much for his like mainstream work. I know him very much for quite the opposite, really.
So tell us a little about how you came across him.
So how did I find Ken Landgraf? There was, I'm a massive Ben Mara fan.
Yeah, me too.
I'm a huge Ben Mara fan.
Yeah. In fact, Mr. Broly's got me into Ben Mara because he bought me a trade. Yeah.
Which one was that?
I'm trying to remember. It's the...
One Man War on Terror?
No.
Night Business?
That might be it, yeah.
The classic.
Okay.
But just flexing my Ben Mara muscles for the audience. So he, in an interview, it's like an hour long, but the last 5 minutes, like the interview, I've never heard of the podcast, this particular podcast, but at the end, he goes on like a big thing about what influenced him. And he he lists off a load of books which I've since bought, but most notably, he says the person he loved the most absolutely was a guy called Ken Landgraf, who did a book called New York City Outlaws, which he loved.
Right.
So I went and researched all this stuff, Ken Landgraf, all this sort of stuff.
Which I don't think you can find other than on eBay, can you?
It's very much one of those things that just hasn't come over. It's like too independent. It hasn't quite reached
the UK.
But I think if you can find them, I think.
Yeah, I love that one.
On like international eBay, they're like it's like $20 a copy, but then you've got to pay like $20 to get shipped.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so I've sort of researched that. And then just sort of followed him, really, I guess. Like, followed his work just because I just found him, like, he says, he's like...
He's got a YouTube channel, we were just watching.
Yeah, if you sort of look at his work, you'll just find it, it's, like, crazy. And then back to the all-time comics thing with Josh Bayer. He inks a lot of that.
Right, oh, okay.
So I sort of followed him to that because I think maybe he heard that same podcast and then him and Ben got talking.
Right.
And then there's a couple of issues where Mara pencils and then Landgraf inks.
Right.
So it's like a hero, like mentor, student sort of coming together.
Because Ken he teaches art as well, doesn't he? He's an art,
I think so,
art
yeah.
Teacher,
I think they've got that crazy thing in America where they like teach comics in like schools and stuff and
crazy.
Colleges.
Outrageous.
Which is just like.
Yeah, we've got Dundee University.
Yeah. but yeah, so basically. He's the first person I think of when I think Outlaw Comics, and we've very much from the start sort of had this down as an outlaw comic.
Yeah, we did, ideally. Yeah, yeah. So that's what I want to do. Yeah.
So
yeah.
We spoke about that. Like I say, the first person I think of, Ken Landgraf. I follow him on Instagram, and he's one of these guys, I think, and if he ever listens to this, which I'm sure he won't, because he's probably got many better things to do. Listening to two men just sit and talk about their little book. I think he sort of struggles with the thing that I think a lot of people, like maybe like a Tim Vigil, do. It's like they were very much rose to fame with like that outlawiness of the late 80s, early 90s, black and white boom stuff. And now they're kind of that the wave they were riding to support themselves. Is very much sort of, it's sort of dwindling away, you know, because there's not many, there's not a lot of people into that stuff anymore.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
So, it's no like slight on us, but I think he just takes the work he can get, if you know what I mean. Like, if someone still appreciates, there's still people around to appreciate his work.
And
you paid. Oh,
you
absolutely.
Know, it's a paying gig, yeah.
And he could have named his price, and you probably would have paid it, unless it was, like, crazy, at which point we would have said, you know, fair enough.
Yeah, good luck.
But it was but yeah, I think he appreciates that people that, you know, there's people around reading, like, Tilly Walden books who aren't necessarily...
Yeah.
Going to be into like Starfighters or whatever, or the other sort of indie stuff he does. He takes commissions and stuff.
And it's a great cover. It looks great. And we've left it purposely. And I asked you, and you said, no, we're going to leave it purposely. It's black and white. Because it looks so striking, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, like mine's like super like the other way. Like my standard covers, like
colours,
like
day glow.
Super colourful.
Yeah.
So I think aesthetically,
yeah,
it works like that. And also, you know, he's, like I say, he's an inker, pretty really, you know.
We're going to get him on board for issue two. We haven't decided, have we?
Possibly.
Maybe, or maybe go...
I've been looking at a sort of a few.
You got a plan?
Yeah, okay. Possibly.
Yeah.
I've been researching...
Tony Fleece. My Little Pony variant cover. That's who we're going to go with.
Yeah, and it so works. It does. So works.
I think he might get banned from working with My Little Pony if
possibly.
He took part in our comic.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But just a pen name. He can use. So that's how... So Ken was like very, very sort of courteous over emails.
If you had to think of someone... And I love Ken's stuff. Lovely. Like, brilliant. I was really pleased. I've just written a piece on saying how over the moon I am to get to work with someone like that, you know? Mm. But if you had to say someone... And we haven't sorted this out yet, but if you had to bucket list, who would you want to do a Severian cover for issue two?
There is quite a list.
Okay.
I reckon we could sort out a list.
Yeah.
I reckon Mr. Shaky Kane's up there.
Yes.
He was one of the people...
He was possible for cover one, wasn't he?
He was.
We talked about him. Yeah.
But I think I got a bit scared in asking him because of fear of rejection. And I also saw that Ken was open for commissions.
Right, okay.
So I just bottled it and went for the easier option. So I'm thinking maybe a Tim Vigil.
Yeah.
Would be, I was looking for his Instagram, and that's like a chef kiss, sort of Atomic Kirkley's written all over it. Yeah. I'm thinking a Rick Veitch.
Oh, I love Rick Veitch's stuff so much. Yeah, he's so good.
I reckon they'll be my three that I'm thinking of. Okay. These sort of outlaw,
yeah,
80s black and white.
Yeah, 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 I get you. I'm thinking Tim Truman. Be too expensive for us.
Possibly.
Yeah.
So, up those pledges.
Yeah, I'm thinking Paul Glacey. Who's given up?
Is he?
He's retired. Who else?
The headline, I can see it now. Two men from St Albans bring Paul Glacey out of retirement.
Yeah. I do have like a sort of vague letter writing. Me and him email each other occasionally, yeah. You know. Oh, who else? You're right, Rick Veitch would be great. Yeah, that would be amazing.
I'm trying to think who else could be. Who else does? I mean, it all depends how, you know, how expensive we want to go.
Imagine if we had a Barry Windsor Smith cover.
Yeah, wonderful.
That would be amazing.
But, anything,
but like, I'd want him to draw in his old Kirby style. I said, don't want none of this noodling.
Just go back in with the old stuff.
Yeah. Well, we've got some fan art. We've got some fan art, which you undoubtedly will have seen. I don't know if we're including it in the package yet, but you can certainly find it online.
At the time of recording, I'm told there's more on the way.
Right. Okay.
Which, I mean, I just think that's...
So we've had the Danny Butcher, Danny Boy Butcher. He's done us one lovely one.
Wonderful.
That's a little surprise. Who else we had?
Mr. Cliff Cumber.
Ah, the Cumber one. That is gorgeous. Yeah, full figure one, that is. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Good friend of mine, Ian Laurie.
Laurie's done one. Yeah, that looks great. I think that's the first one we got through, wasn't it? I think you sent that to me.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's just great to sort of see it.
Yeah.
You know, that people are...
It's nice that we... I know we're not the sort of guys who go, oh yeah, we've got this like advertising strategy or anything like that. But it's nice to see a bit of heat about the subject, you know.
A little bit, you know. I mean, I don't profess to be a great salesman. In fact, quite the opposite. I kind of guessing you're the same. Like,
yeah.
You know,
I just sort of despise, unless I'm doing it for no brow when it's my job. But I despise that whole hard sell thing, and I don't do the hard sell thing at all. I think speaking passionately about the comic is enough where I'm telling people how brilliant you and the comic are.
Yeah, I kind of feel like if I'm at a con behind a table, like, as an artist, just like, I feel like if you were a writer, like you have got to sort of sell that, because what your work isn't visual on the table. They've got to take that away and read it.
Yeah.
But as an artist behind the table, if they look connect with the art, then... Okay.
Quickly, because I've just come back from Angoulême, and there were so many books I'd never seen, and there is a sort of small pressy element to Angoulême. I was literally, you can tell, because you open a book, look at two pages, close it, look at two pages. It's all it takes for me. You know, the art is what sells it. It really is. Okay, cool. Right, good. Anything else you want to talk about?
I guess if you're listening to this, I guess.
Yeah, thanks a lot for buying it.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
I really appreciate it. Yeah, we genuinely do. I'm like really chuffed when people actually pledge to some of the nonsense me have come up with.
Well, we sort of, I went for a little higher of a target, which, you know, it's not crazy. We're not after. You see some that are after crazy money.
Yeah.
It's like, are you trying to like.
I know.
Are you after like a mortgage deposit or what?
Yeah.
I mean, what
some people are after a yearly wage from looking for it sometimes.
But we've gone a bit higher and we still sort of
smashed
it by
We're paying for Ken, aren't we? We've got Ken to pay for. We've got the hookers that will be invited to the release party.
Yeah. It's a little bit like we're Tony says we're in this office. It's a little like Wolf of Wall Street at the minute. There's midgets flying around.
I'll get in trouble again. I love Nobrow, as you well know. I love it. It's literally the dream job for me. But there's no way. Sam was saying to me, "Oh, I'm going to pledge for it." I said, "I don't know if it's your kind of book, Sam." But you know, he was very generous and very kind about
it. Well, I did. Flying, I received my pitch document.
Well, Hilda won't last forever.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. It's like young Hilda. Or like old man Hilda. Old man Hilda.
Yeah, fighting his way across the apocalyptic wasteland.
Just a miserable little bitch in her old age.
Yes, killing people. Yeah. Yeah, that's going to get me in trouble, that bit.
Absolutely.
Good.
So, issue two, coming to Kickstarter.
Yeah, coming to Kickstarter any minute. Probably might have started as you listen to this if you've taken your time to get to it. It's more like, I think if issue one was turned up to 100, this is turned up to about 150.
Yeah. If there were any part of you that was turned on or excited by issue number one and issue two, issue two is where it's at.
Yeah. Let's just say if you're fond of unicorns, you may enjoy it.
I think what's happened is we've become immune to the outrageousness.
I think you're right.
And then you've because I don't find it particularly bad anymore.
No, I know.
But I've spent weeks working on it.
Yeah.
And then I don't think you find it.
No, because sure it's sort of sitting in my head for a while, thinking about it. And you kind of accept, I've got that bit. Well, let's include this bit.
Yeah, so yeah, issue two, you need to go more outrageous. Yeah. And you have done.
And you might see more. There might be some more.
I like to think
so. See how
we've had a good time.
Yeah. You might see some more of Noodles and Crystal.
Yeah. I know you say that you're a big fan of sort of doing it because you enjoy it.
Yeah.
And this has been very enjoyable.
It's been fun, hasn't it? Yeah,
definitely. I reckon this is a way to get your vices onto the page.
Put it all on me.
Yeah.
Just for the legal action that takes place.
Absolutely.
You've got it on tape that it's all my idea. Good.
I'll swear on oath that it was nothing to do with me. I'm just like a tool.
No copyright issues in there at all. There's a lot of people called Jane Foster.
There absolutely are.
Right. Thanks, Geezer.
Cheers, mate.